Welcome to episode 585 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we feature a wonderful conversation with filmmaker, educator, continent trekker, among other things. Speaking with us from her place in Oakland, California, Amy Reed. We talk with Amy about her earlier years, being on the move, high school in Baltimore, building community and relationships with people, learning from other people that are quote unquote different, her film Long Haulers, her time in Jackson Heights, Queens, living forever and passing away, older women of color, gender, national identity, and work, quilting and U.S. history, driving across the U.S., who American women are, ideas of America, listening to each other, curiosity, a grand conversation with Amy Reed this go-round. We also have an EW poetic piece titled Quilted, and all of this, of course, will be infused, imbued with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to be with you. Let's get to it then. Episode 585 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
I can't stand the rain against my window, bringing back sweet memories. Yeah, when the rain, do you remember how sweet it used to be?
Is that you, Amy Reed?
Yes, it is me. I'm here.
Thank you so much for being on Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And, it's a pleasure. I can't wait to talk with you. And let me share a little background information with the listeners before we get started. Amy Reed is a filmmaker whose work examines the intersections between gender, national identities, and labor. By exploring observational approaches and expanding upon formal cinematic notions of time, structure, and narrative, Reed's work questions how labor is constructed in the filmic form. As seen in their film Long Haulers, a 16mm and video experimental feature documentary on female truckers, Amy has participated in selected screenings nationally and internationally, including Los Angeles Film Forum, IC Video Film Festival Shanghai, and the Workers United Film Festival in New York. Reed received a Bachelor of Fine Arts from the Cooper Union before graduating with an MFA in Visual Arts from UC San Diego, and is now a PhD candidate at UC Santa Cruz in Film and Digital Media. Amy's residencies include the Whitney Independent Study Program, Snug Harbor Artist Residency, and seniors partnering with Arts Citywide Queens. Troubadours and Rock On Tours is very happy to have on the program Amy Reed. Again, Amy, thank you so much for taking some time out of your schedule to talk with us. And I understand we're talking with you from your place in Oakland, California, right?
Yeah, I've lived here in the East Bay now for the last 3 years, and it's not too far from Santa Cruz, but great city.
Yeah, I can't wait to one day get out there myself. I haven't been that far west, believe it or not. And I wanted to get us going. I have a lot of stuff, as you know, that I'd like to talk with you about. But let's start with your so-called journey. Like, where are you from? And tell us a bit about the journey that got you to where you are today, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so I'm one of those people who grew up kind of up and down the East Coast, and I think in that way I make a connection with the constant moving I did as a kid, with the kind of work that I'm interested in that sort of explores various regions and places within the United States. And I think in some ways too that, so I was born in Connecticut in Waterbury, and then moved down to South Florida to West Palm Beach when I was a young child, just two. And I spent my formative childhood in Florida, which is, you know, the South, but not really the South when you're on the East Coast. I mean, I was north of Miami by a few hours. And then I moved up to Baltimore to go to high school, and then moved to New York when I was 18. So I moved around a lot, and my parents are also from various areas. My mom was born in Indiana. My dad is from Rhode Island. And they're, you know, generations back go to places like Virginia or Pennsylvania. And I think that sort of mixture of being from of really kind of diverse regions and cultures have kind of made me feel a little bit more adaptable in some ways to meeting different people and communities that might be outside of my own. And also that, like, I just moved so much as a kid. I was a child of divorced parents, and so constantly half of the week was at my dad's, half of the week was at my mom's, lived in so many different apartment buildings my whole life. And I've just always kind of been on the move. And I think that was also what drew me to the life of truckers. I mean, they're always on the move as well. So that's kind of where I'm from. And I don't know if you want me to elaborate on certain points there, but.
Well, you know, that helps right there. I'm, you know, you got into how you sort of maybe develop some of the interest you have in some of the subject areas you've been focusing on in your most recent films. I'm also wondering about some of the more, you know, important individuals in your life over these years, some of your influences, some significant experiences that have helped to define how you look at yourself in the world.
I mean, there's lots of people, and probably too many to say in this like program and the time we have right now. But I think when I moved up to Baltimore, I went to a public high school, but it was an art magnet high school. So I had a teacher who was, you know, at the time her name was Mrs. McDaniel. She now is Terry Shevlin, and she was a great, just a really great mentor to me. I mean, I was really, I was this like budding angsty teenage artist in Baltimore, and I was really interested using my art. I mean, it was a kind of a traditional school in that we were doing figurative painting and drawing and painting, oil-based painting, and really kind of studying the classic, you know, white Western canon male master painters. But a lot of the projects I was starting to do there was really trying to use art as a way to facilitate relationship building with people. And my teacher, Terry, was really just really encouraging of that. And I think having that space to kind of explore my creative interests while also finding ways to build community and relationships with people that sort of help facilitate my own like growth, I think, as an artist. And I mean, I certainly think the women who I've met in my projects are really inspirational for me and help me think about the ways that I, yeah, want to be in relation to people, the ways that I can learn from other people who might be deemed as different or not coming from the same background, you know, maybe coming from a fine arts background or coming from an art academic background. Certainly the truckers that I rode with during the years I was making long haulers, I mean, all three of those women have made a deep impression on me, and I think that will inform how I want to work in the continuing years. And a project actually, though, prior to long haulers and while I was still living in New York, I did, you mentioned the residency I did with this program initiative that I don't know if still is existing now, but it was a program with the Department for the Aging and also the cultural arts centers in each borough. And it was called Seniors Partnering with Artists Citywide. And I did a residency for 6 months at a senior center in Jackson Heights, Queens. And made a collaborative video project with a group of women there at a senior center. It was a day center. And I came into that project with a, you know, a proposal, as often you get when you're an artist or a filmmaker, you have to come in with, this is what I'm doing and this is why it's important. And I have found as I continue to make projects that I really want to have the people, the participants in my projects help shape and inform what the project is before, you know, I decide. I might have an idea, but that's gonna usually it goes out the window once I actually start to interact and meet with people. And so those women at the senior center, they I had wanted to do a project sort of reenacting moments of their past, and they were like, we don't want to focus on that. You know, our past are sad, or we've lost people, or we want to focus on who we are right now. And I realized that coming into that project, I had a lot of preconceived notions of what who elders are and what they're concerned about. And meeting these women, they really opened up my eyes to who they were and the lives that they were leading then. And we wound up making this kind of very playful, collaborative project that it's called Games. And because they play a lot of games, they play like they go to the casino, they play bingo every Friday, they play cards. And so we did this like we would play, they would play games, these sort of fictitious games that we kind of made up. And then I would ask them sort of as they were playing, if you could win, what would you want? And then, you know, it often revealed, I mean, this was after 6 months of kind of spending every week with them. I would go there to the center and kind of teach an informal art class, but it was really just like group therapy. It was just us talking and hanging out and, you know, drawing or just kind of doing some sort of art activity. And in the film, they, you know, open up talking about how if they won, they would want to see their husband one last time or a child that had passed away, or they would want a limousine to take them to a certain place, or they would want to live forever or some, you know, then the conversation, it wasn't just between me and them, it was between all of us. And they would then also reflect some people, some of the women wanted to live forever, some wanted to, you know, were okay that they were going to pass away. They reflected on their own aging, what it means to kind of grow old. And so I think that was a really informative moment in my art making that I was engaging with other people. I was learning something new that I didn't know prior, and that it felt like a very collaborative and really about like friendship and community building. And so I think that sort of sparked how, and also valuing, you know, the voices that we often get ignored, you know, older women of color, who have had really diverse and complex lives, and who often just don't get the attention that they deserve.
You know, that's fascinating, and I can see how that would be inspiring. I'm wondering, what was the age difference at that point when you were working with these women, between you and them?
I mean, I was in my early to mid 20s. I was probably 24, 25, and these women were mostly in their 80s, some were in their 90s. And one woman, Carmen, who I still am in touch with intermittently, she was at the time in her mid 70s. So she was the youngest.
And this is all documented in a project, a film project called Games, is that right?
Yeah, it was about a 12-minute piece that I made with these women.
Can anybody access it still if they wanted to?
You can go. My website is it's one of my summer things. My website is down right now, but it's on my Vimeo page, and you can access it through that. If you
Just to
just kind of search Amy Reed Games, and then even if you want to Jackson Heights or something, it was at the Catherine Sheridan Senior Center, which I think is still in existence.
Excellent. And it's AMYREID, folks, games. And you know, you also mentioned long haulers, and I know you're working on another project right now, not finished yet, called Grandmother's Garden, about quilting in particular, among other things. And you know, I want to talk about those projects, but more broadly, I want to ask you something that I think is related to what you were just discussing to a certain extent. How and why, and to what effect do gender, national identity, and work collide? I know that's something that's important to you. You see a confluence of all these factors: gender, national identity, and work. How so?
Yeah, I mean, I think those are the sort of three main pillars that I'm interested in kind of triangulating or understanding in relation to my work, whether that's really kind of blatant or not. And that feels sort of really activated, at least for me, those interests when I began doing work, with the truckers, the three women I rode with around the United States, who are all long haul truckers. And, you know, the trucking industry is historically, of course, always a male dominated work environment. And then also, I think, a very kind of blue collar, American, you know, with a capital A, sort of, it's the sort of equivalent in my mind to like a modern cowboy, or at least that's how I think it's been framed in certain TV, country music, et cetera, throughout the decades. And certainly kind of in my mind too, for that, like a connection with that line of work, or the ways in which the US sort of idealizes blue collar work to a certain extent, in its history. And I mean, I think that's a really complicated and rich and interesting history. Of course, again, has always been very male dominated in, you know, the histories with unions, et cetera. Although, of course, there's always been women and people of color too in those spaces as well, but they don't get sort of glorified in the same way that the, like, you know, busting muscly white man with his wrench might. And so with long haulers, that thinking about that identity of the trucker, but thinking about it through the lens of a woman's perspective, felt really kind of important again in thinking about ignored voices, and then also thinking about my own relationship. I'm a woman, and I knew I wanted to ride with truckers on that project, and I knew for my own safety and comfort and ease, I wanted to do that with women rather than men. And then thinking about, in general, I think the US has a tendency to make this relationship, or that we're sort of sold this narrative that our work and our identity have to match in some ways, that we have to have a passion and a care for what we do, and that our work is sort of this all-encompassing thing. And trucking certainly, I mean, the women said it themselves, that it's a lifestyle and it's not a job. And I think if there's an attraction to a certain type of person who likes some, solitariness, or likes their independence, or likes their, just time on the road, that certainly was the case with the people that I met, and then the three women that are featured in the project. And so I'm curious in my work to kind of think about all of those aspects and ways that they're true for people, but ways that I can think sort of complicate that or question that. And in the case now with this project about women and quilting in US history, I mean, the labor and the kind of quote unquote work is a lot more invisible than, like, say, a trucker might look. We the sort of labor of sewing is seen as sort of a domestic chore. It's seen as kind of this unpaid work that often, again, women are doing, and that sort of falls under the category of domestic labor, household labor. And certainly there's that gendered identity around all of that. And then I think within this project, I've been thinking about the material itself of cotton, and how, there are these actual histories, if we just look at at a quilt deep enough, or if we touch it, to sort of think about relationships of cotton with the textile industry in New England in the 19th and 20th centuries, that were often, again, women that started with the Lowell girls, who were coming from these agricultural towns in Vermont and New Hampshire to places like Lowell, Massachusetts. Then that became Portuguese and European immigrants who would come and work in these textile mills. And then thinking about the histories around slavery and cotton production in the South, and then later sharecropping. And then thinking also about westward expansion and how quilts are used to sort of narrativize histories around women, the pioneer woman. And I mean, that project is sort of, I would say, thinking more about histories around the US, but how women are sort of implicated or embedded in those histories.
We're talking about grandmother's garden.
Yes, grandmother's garden.
As compared to long haulers, that's more of an independent sort of focus on particular individuals.
Yeah, I mean, Long Haulers was a much more kind of straightforward project. I mean, I was sort of enthralled by trucking. I had moved to California, and I was doing a lot of driving at that point. And I still had community back in New York, and then I had a dog, so I was always just driving back and forth from the East to West Coast. I think I've done, I don't know, I've lost count, maybe 10 or 11 cross-country trips in
Wow.
total before even doing long haulers.
That's cool.
So yeah, so I've just traveled a lot throughout the US, and wanted to kind of that project was really like wanting to follow individuals, because we, as they call it, four wheel the truckers would call us four wheelers in our small cars. We imagine about who these people might be, but we don't actually know. And so I wanted that, again, in my like general art practice, like using a project idea to help facilitate a new understanding or a curiosity I have, and building a relationship too in that process of like meeting people. So that project was a lot more boundaried, I would say, where my new project is a lot more like a patchwork quilt. It's much more, I'm going to various parts of the United States and looking at really various histories within the US, but predominantly late 19th and early 20th century histories.
And we're talking again about Long Haulers, a film that's already done and available, and one that you're working on, Grandmother's Garden. That is the quilting film you're referencing. Amy Reed is our guest filmmaker, talking with us from her place in Oakland, California, here on Troubadours and Rock On Tours. And Long Haulers, if people want to watch that, I guess they could just type it in the good old Google search and it'll pop up somewhere.
Yeah, so Long Haulers is available on Canopy for those of you who have, subscriptions or access to Canopy. It can also be found through New Day Films, which is the distributor that it's a cooperative, feminist cooperative distribution cooperative. I wouldn't say company because we're a cooperative that Long Haulers is distributed with.
I prefer co-ops too. I'm involved. Actually, Radio Free Brooklyn, the station that one of the stations this will air on, is a co-op. Co-ops are the best, I think. Nice arrangements. We all chip in a little bit. We keep it going. No commercial entities. It's all about the substance. It's all about community. It's all about the art. I love it. So I understand why you want to say that instead of company. I get it. And Grandmother's Garden. When will that be done? Do you know?
I've kind of joked to the people I'm working with that it's like I'm making a an elaborate hand-pieced quilt with this film. I'm about to actually go back on the road next week for the next 2 months with a grant that I received through the Center for Labor and Community Studies at UC Santa Cruz, where I'm at getting my PhD. It's technically also a part of my dissertation, although this is sort of this will be Grandmother's Garden will be sort of like Long Haulers as a feature. This Grandmother's Garden will also be a feature. And for better or for worse, my projects are individually made by me. I think coming from that art, more kind of fine arts background, that I'm not trained in formal film training where you're thinking about working with a crew and a sound person and a producer. And I make all of my projects pretty much by myself. Like I said, for better or for worse, I'm going to reconsider that after this project is done, because for instance, I mean, Long Haulers took me about 5 years to make, and then Grandmother's Garden I started back in 2020, but I'm hoping to finish in the next 2 years. To like, by say 2 years, that would be that this would be out in festivals and out in the world. But I'm still in the process of filming and kind of figuring out what the logic of that project is.
Yes, that brings up to my mind a question. How do you start off with this? An idea, a notion pops into your head, and then you just let it unfold as it will, or you have a more strict set of ideas and guidelines that you put down on paper and follow.
I mean, I think kind of what I was saying with that Project Games, the one with the seniors in Jackson Heights, is that that project really showed me that I might have an idea, but that that idea is often not going to be what the final project is. And so I think, it makes things longer, it makes things more complicated in some ways. But I of course, I start with a question or a curiosity with Long Haulers. I was like, what is that like to be a trucker? And how does one experience time when you're driving that much? And what is the life like of a woman driver in a male-dominated space? So those were some questions, but I didn't have a agenda. And I always said to the women I was working with, I'm not an expose journalist. I don't come from an angle that I need to sort of execute. And also, like, I really just wanting to kind of build a relationship with people, not, and then that it translates, of course, into the film, but it also is just like, I want to connect with people. And I use film to do that. But with Grandmother's Garden, I mean, there's many threads, to no pun intended, but the main kind of thing I've been thinking about is, how do quilts get used to narrativize and tell stories of women here in the US, but then also when we look at quilts and we when I'm meeting with quilters, I'm both working in archives, but meeting with quilters in the regions I've been going to, and really just trying to understand how what are women expressing when they're making quilts. I mean, what are the stories that they're telling and what are their histories? And understanding that those histories connect with these larger histories of the US.
And that, well, that's a great go. No, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And just to kind of understand, well, what are the actual histories, but then what are the histories we're sort of more broadly told, and how are those two things like in contrast or in conversation with each other? That's, I think, the crux of what I'm curious about, but it always comes from a place of curiosity.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
So you think there are untold stories and unrepresented cultures and people in the narrative that we, know and the popular culture of the U.S.?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, I think especially when we talk about women's histories, I mean, there's so many stories that get untold, so many things that are seen as minor or insignificant. And I think that quilting, even though, I mean, it's a phenomenal art form, and I'm constantly blown away by the quilts that I've seen and continue to see, but they're always sort of minor to the histories that we're often told. And I think that there's so many quilts that I've seen in museum and archival spaces that are unidentified, an unidentified maker. There's no sort of history attached to that. And I think that's where, these kind of more mythical narratives then get placed on these people, who they were. And I think that's one, it's interesting why we one create those myths and what those actually say about our current contemporary moment and what we imagine or want to imagine of the past in the US. But then it's also very reflective of how ignored women's histories have and continue to be in our culture.
Well, for sure. And, obviously, a main focus, a main interest for you in your work, and I suppose just in your life, is women, however you'd want to define that even, and I'm wondering, in your view, in your understanding up to this point, who are American women as you understand it?
I mean, I think that's a really complicated question. I mean, I think one, I mean, maybe I want to ask, well, what is America? I mean, there's, I think historically, there's a lot of assumptions around who American women are, and, typecasting that's both on a racial or sexual identities or class. And I think what I am more interested in thinking is not so much like who is the American woman, but like who are these individuals and how do they actually relate to that idea? How do they see themselves in relation to this idea of what an American woman is? So I don't think I have a answer to that. To me, it's sort of on a individual by individual basis, but I think the people I've met throughout my life so far on my projects, that's, these seniors in Jackson Heights or the truckers or the quilters. I mean, they're all people with deep, deep and rich lives that intersect with some of these ideas of what we think American women are. Of course, some of the people I've met are mothers. Some of the people I've met are married to men. Some of the people I've met are queer. Some of the people I've met are coming from middle class and working class background. Some of the people I've met are coming from lower socioeconomic backgrounds, and really, again, diverse I don't know if some of the women I would meet even would want to say that they're an American woman. I mean, the project I'm working on right now, I'm working with women from both the Blackfeet and Fort Peck reservations in Montana. And so I think there's a really complicated history there, one of violence around the United States and their own kind of tribal identities as both Blackfeet or Assiniboine or Nakota Sioux women. So I think that to me, it's yeah, that I mean, that's kind of probably going to be a continual question and for me and my work. I don't know if I'll have an answer to
No,
that ever.
as you mentioned earlier, before we started recording, these questions are broad, and the term American in and of itself is loaded, right? I mean, America, we oftentimes just say that's the U.S., but you're talking Canada, you're talking the U.S., you're talking Mexico, and keep going, keep going south, and these and indigenous folk, as well as Europeans, as well as people that were brought here against their will, all mixed together. It's, American. What is that? I mean, that word in and of itself, and then you throw in women, and try to define what that means. Yeah, that was an unfair question, I suppose, but you gave a great answer. You did. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I mean, whoa, who are American men? That's another one, right? We won't even go
Yeah.
there. Well,
Yeah, I
but
mean, there should be more filmmakers really questioning that. I think that there's a lot to be said about who what how masculinity and this yeah. I mean, that's for another filmmaker, maybe me in my later life.
yeah, maybe you could kind of transfer your focus onto that if you ever get the impulse. But who knows? I think you have enough to work with right here, right? You have such fascinating questions and impulses in a way, dealing with well, the film Games and Seniors, and then the long haulers, those folks, and now quilters all across the country. Wow, your impulses are great. I watched a little bit of Long Haulers. I'm going to get back to, because I saw the trailer you gave me, but then you gave me a link to the whole film. I can't wait to watch it. I'm waiting for a time when my wife and I can sit down together, because I know she'll love it. So let me ask you, we're running into towards the end of our time, this go round here with Amy Reed on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. I'm EW Conundrum Demure, and it's a pleasure to have you with us. Let's see where we can go in these next few minutes. Well, America itself, I kind of mentioned how complicated it is to even understand what that term means and who it includes or excludes. Do you have some ideas about America that you've come to understand or come to question that you view as important and consequential here in our experience at present?
I mean, yeah, I think especially now as we're in this kind of moment of transition between, with the election coming up this fall, and of course with Harris coming in as the lead and for the Democratic Party, and of course, Trump, and right now it feels like there's so much. There's so much noise and there's so much kind of I mean, I was kind of joking with you before the show began. I feel like these moments of panic that the world feels like it's just kind of crumbling against your will or under your feet. And I think with that, there's a lot of course perceptions again that we have of each other, of these divides, of these differences, and a lot of fear. I think that the way that this country operates mostly is around fear and igniting fear in each other, of each other, and of people, and divides against each other. And so I think for me, what I want to do in my work is really listen to people and listen sort of across difference. The people that I've worked with, I mean, I would say really come from a diverse political backgrounds from my own. And rather than sort of jumping to conclusions, I really want to come from a place of curiosity to understand, you know, why it is that they feel this way and why it is that I feel this way, and to have a conversation about it. And I think that ability to listen to each other is a form of kind of combating that instinct of fear that gets kind of put on us, you know, that fuels different industries here in the United States, from the prison industrial complex to the military industrial complex to so on and so forth. That so I think for me, it's really about, again, approaching people from a place of curiosity and openness, and trying to be as good of a listener as I'm able to be. And generally too, I think that that really changes. It doesn't maybe change some of the fundamental feelings I have around, you know, basic human rights, for instance, but I think it helps me understand someone's perspective or how they might have arrived to that in a way that gives me kind of more, yeah, just kind of opens up my perception. I don't know if I, you know, this is again a hard question to answer, but listening, you know, and that's what, for me as a filmmaker, I'm trying to do, is to talk less and to listen more.
I hear that. I hear that. And you know, your experience with different groups, different communities over the years is valuable, I'm sure, as you listen and as you observe and you connect. Don't you notice? I mean, I would bet you notice that though there are distinct differences in terms of experience and culture, I suppose. Basically, when you boil it all down, don't we all just want the same things?
I mean, yeah, we all want the sort of basic securities, food, you know, food and water and shelter, and the sort of freedom to express ourselves in ways that feel true to our own bodies and our lived experiences. I think the way that the United States has operated often has been that your safety and security has to be at the expense of other people, and that is a, again, that's a fear, that's a fear-based logic rather than a logic that is coming from a place that aren't all of our needs can be met.
And as you mentioned, it develops industries for folks to make a lot of money and create a lot of and garner a lot of power from, and at the expense of most of the rest of us. You know, that the fear definitely creates so many opportunities for people who want to make, again, want to make something for themselves out of it. And it's such a negative approach. I value what you're doing. It really is important for our society and our community to be able to honestly hear and see what human beings are doing and how they're living their lives, how they're experiencing their lives. And if folks are receptive and without, you know, if they don't come to whatever it is you're offering with preconceived ideas, I think it's going to affect any individual in a positive way to see that humanness. You know, I mean, again, I don't want to discount that people experience different things and have different struggles because of it. And others have an easier time, perhaps, right? For sure, actually. But nonetheless, we have to remember all that we all pretty much, as you described, want the same sort of things. You know, want to be able to live our lives without having to be persecuted or limited. You know, there are crazy people, and I mean that in the bad sense. There's good crazy that are dangerous, but they're few and far between. Most people are not. I would bet on that as well. Most people are just pretty much normal if you just let them be, right? I mean, normal, quote unquote. I don't know if that made any sense either, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think again, I mean, and I think kind of going back to filmmaking and media, I mean, that has a real impact on how we view each other. And I think that is a job that I don't take lightly as someone who makes films too, and what that historically, the power that's been wielded over Black and brown people and other racialized communities and other people with in the disabilities community or queer communities or age, et cetera, that the ways in which we represent people on screen have a way to influence how policies are made, how we view people on the street, et cetera. And I think that's my a job as a filmmaker to be conscious and aware of that, and also reflect on ways that I could also very well fall into those same tropes if I'm not being mindful, because I think, again, these are histories that are baked in film and television and media, but also in literature and et cetera, that those have ways of influencing our perceptions.
For sure. For sure. It's a huge responsibility, really. I bet you would think it to be. You want to make sure you're doing justice to what is actually occurring. You're representing things as honestly and as legitimately as you possibly can. And with editing and all of that, I'm sure that's a challenge. Again, we're talking to Amy Reed here, filmmaker, educator, cross country trekker, among other things. It's a pleasure to have you on the program. And we have a few more minutes. We talked about some pretty heavy things, and I'm trying to make sure we have a nice thread in our conversation. Is there anything in particular you'd like to address or say to those listening?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think if anything, if people watch my projects or I just kind of want what I hope in my projects is to kind of reorient some of our views towards the people I'm featuring in my projects. That would be truckers, women truckers, women who do quilts or make crafts. And so, yeah, I would say for those who are interested in my work and watch it, again, Long Haulers is on Canopy and through New Day Films, that your idea changes. And also with trucking, I think too, like how we as individuals are implicated in these histories, whether we know it or not. With the truckers, they've said, everything that you own or have in your house has been on a truck at some point. And so, again, to think about the ways in which women's work, the sort of invisible labor of women's work, is kind of throughout our worlds, and to have a more critical view of that, I think, is what I hope people to get out of my work.
Nice said, nicely said. Wonderfully expressed today here, all your ideas and sharing with us some of the projects that you've been working on. I'm compelled to check them all out myself, and I'm looking forward to what you're going to be doing in the future as well, Amy. And my compliments to you. It's obviously this is not about commercial success, although at some point maybe you'll make a couple of bucks. It's about substance, and it's so important, and it's so to me honorable that you're doing what you're doing. So thank you. Thank you, and thank you for being on Troubadours and Rock on Tours. I hope we can talk again in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I would love to tell you guys to tell you about the grandmother's garden when it's all done.
For sure. You let me know when you're ready to talk about that, and we'll find a time to do it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Enjoy the rest of the summer, and let's go, Kamala.
Yes. Thank you. Yes.
Take care, Amy. Pleasure.
Take care.
Thank you.
appeal sways between suitors on a broken heel. Of course her desires they always mistook. She'd rather been scarred than be scarred with love. In conversation she'd often contend costumes build customs that evolve dead ends. She found her courage in a change of scene. This Sunday social would be short its queen. All her best years spent distracted by these tired reenactments. With the right step she would try her chances somewhere. Outside her view, reciting the words he hoped she might pursue. Night upon night, a faithful life shore. Feet only convince his legs across the floor.
Please don't watch me dancing. Oh no, don't watch me dancing.
Teach you what romance is. With the right step, they could try their chances somewhere.
Quilted, waxing poetic as a flummoxed pre-diabetic drags himself to another fast food-induced throne, quick as a supplicant drone who has sense enough, yet chooses not to leave that fool alone, takes another step away from his home, and digs deeper and deeper still, but never reaches substance, never can feel his bones. His soul into hers, then theirs, and it might even penetrate a bit of yours, but don't you let that occur, madam and sir, baby boy and young girl, mama and papa, grandma and granddad, and Uncle Earl, Aunt Cat Lady Jezebel, your wisdom and might we must unfurl, for the wicked cannot prevail here and now. The truly righteous in love and acceptance and with beautiful vision is our way for this human world. Together, down from the history path, into everything we twirl.
up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. They took all the trees, put them in a tree museum. And they charged the people a dollar and a half just to see them. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Hey, farmer, farmer, put away the DDT now. Give me spots on my apples, or leave me the birds and the bees. Please, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. Late last night, I heard the screen door slam, and a big yellow taxi took away my old man. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. I said, don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot. They pay paradise, put up a parking lot.
And there you have it, episode 585 of Troubadours and Raconteurs, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, Amy Reed. And these musical artists, Thelonious Monk, Ann Peebles, Lily Joy, Joni Mitchell, Branford Marsalis, and Terrence Blanchard, too. And of course, I would like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care of yourself.